Gopijana malaba giribada di Gopijana malaba giribada di Yashoda nanana Rajajana ranjana Yashoda nanana Rajajana ranjana Yamuna tira manachade Yamuna tira manachade Jai Ho Radha Madhava Kunjabi Radhi Jai Ho Radha Madhava Kunjabi Radhi Gopi Jana Malaba Giribadu Daudi Gopi Jana Malaba Giribadu Daudi Yasudanan Tana Braja Jana Ranjana Yasudanandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachadi Yamuna Tira Manachadi Jai Hurad Humadava Kunjabi Rati Jai Radham Madhava Kunjabi Rati Jai Om Vishnupad. Paramahansa Parabhatacharya also tells that the Shri Srimad, His Divine Grace, Avaya Channada Bhaktivedanta Gosami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, ISKCON Founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Ananda Gauti Vaishnav Vrinda Ki Jai, Namacharya, Srila Kailas Thakur Ki Jai, Prem Se Gaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Parabhu Nichananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasudhi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Shaima Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavanam Ki Jai Mathuradam Ki Jai Jagannatha Swami Ki Jai Yamunamaya Ki Jai Srimati Lasi Devi Ki Jai Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Om. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Udle Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami. Namaste, Saraswati Deve, Gauravani Pacharni, Nibisesus, anybody, Paschat, Dejatarni. So, Omagana, Timiranda, Shag, and Anjana, Shlakaya, Chakshur, Unmilitam, Yena, Tasmai, Shi, Gurave, Namaha. So, I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. So kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So, now we have the exciting Bhagavad Gita in the fifth chapter, beginning with the seventh text. And we will share our screen here. So let us read and comment. There we go. Okay. Yoga yukto vishudatma jitatma jitendriyaha sarva bhutatma bhutatma kurvanapi na libyate Yoga Yukta, engage in devotional service, Vishuddha Atma, a purified soul, Vijita Atma, self-controlled, Jita Indriya, having conquered the senses. Sarva Bhuta, to all living entities, Atma Bhuta, Atma, compassionate. Kurvanapi, although engaged in work, na, never, Lipyate, is entangled. So, translation. One who works in devotion, who is a pure soul, and who controls his mind and senses, is dear to everyone, and everyone is dear to him. Though always working, such a man is never entangled. Let me explain this. So there's an interesting verse that is connected with this that was written by a great devotee named Srinivasacharya. And Srinivasacharya was second generation from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he wrote this song called the Goswami Ashtaka. Ashtaka means eight. So it has eight verses. And one of the verses is Dira Dira Janapriyo Priyakaro Nirmatsuro Pujito. So that's part of the verse, and that's the part I wanted to talk about. So Dira means, actually, it means basically he's peaceful, self-controlled. Basically the same thing that's talked about here. Adhira. So someone who is self-controlled, dhira, adhira, jana priyo. Jana means the people. So there are people who are self-controlled and there are people who are not self-controlled. In other words, everybody. That includes everybody. Dhira, dhira, jana priyo, priya karo. So one who is Krishna conscious, same thing as this verse, but this is in reference to the Goswamis of Vrindavan. There are six Goswamis of Vrindavan. Actually, there's others who are on that same level who are their associates, like Bhugara Goswami and others. So one who is Krishna conscious loves, basically, dhira dhira janapriyo, priyakuro. He's dear to everyone and everyone is dear to him. Same thing as here. Wow, really. It's really interesting how this verse of the six Goswamis Vrindavan is the same thing. Dhira dhira janapriyo priyakuro niramatsaro pujito. And the reason is niramatsaro. He is not envious of anybody. So what is envy? Envy means to use someone, to try to possess someone, or to be upset that someone has more than you, and you get angry with them as a result of that. So in Krishna consciousness, we understand that everyone is part and parcel of Krishna, so how can we use anyone? And also, that whatever anyone has, whether it is a talent, whether it is the intelligence, whether it is money, whether it is some other type of opulence, is all a quota, or his quota, or her quota, given by Krishna. So therefore, you're not envious. Nirmatsuro Pujito. There's another one, Pujito. And Pujito means one is not interested in worship. Just like we have in Krishna consciousness. What? Or also means he is worshipable. I mean, there's two ways of understanding that word in that verse. That such a person is worshipable because he is not interested in being worshipped. Sometimes we find that certain political leaders, but to speak of religious leaders, they like all their fans to cheer for them. And if not enough fans show up at a particular political rally, they get depressed. And we see in the case of Prabhupada that sometimes people didn't show up when Prabhupada was giving a lecture, but he still spoke because he did understand that all the demigods were there. That's a pretty good audience. But he still spoke. because he wasn't interested in being worshipped, even though all of us worship Srila Prabhupada. He would sit on a big seat and we'd offer him puja. Puja means worship. And Prabhupada was always considering himself to be a servant of a servant of a servant of the Lord who maintains the gopis in Vrindavan. So anyway, so this is the position of a pure devotee. Pure devotee controls his mind and senses. Why or how? By thinking of what pleases Krishna. That's love. It's not that he just controls them. He controls them for a purpose. And that purpose is love, which is the strongest purpose. And everyone is dear to him. That's really interesting. So he, in other words, he loves everyone. Of course, they're all parts and parcel of Krishna. And also, he is completely compassionate. Because, why is he completely compassionate? Because he sees others' pains and pleasures like his own pains and pleasures. Okay, so let's read Srila Prabhupada's purport. One who is on the path of liberation by Krishna consciousness is very dear to every living being, and every living being is dear to him. This is due to his Krishna consciousness. Such a person cannot think of any living being as separate from Krishna. Remember, I mean, it's hard. It's really hard to do, just like, it doesn't mean he sees every living being as Krishna. But he sees every living being as connected to Krishna, as Krishna's son, as Krishna's daughter. And that's hard sometimes. Let's say we come across a snake. It's hard to see that snake is connected to Krishna. It's hard to see a crocodile is connected to Krishna. Like we were talking to the devotees this morning, very few people have pet porcupines. And for those of you who don't know what a porcupine is, some of the devotees didn't know what a porcupine was when I started talking about it this morning. A porcupine is an animal that has needles sticking out all over his body. So not a very nice animal to pet. In fact, you know, stay away from a porcupine because that's his natural defense. Or, what to speak of an animal we have here in quite abundance, a skunk. Not many people adopt pet skunks. Anyway, so such a person cannot, I'm reading this again, cannot think of any living being as separate from Krishna. Just as the leaves and branches of a tree are not separate from the tree. He knows very well that by pouring water on the root of the tree, the water will be distributed to all the leaves and branches, or by supplying food to the stomach, the energy is automatically distributed throughout the body. Because one who works in Krishna consciousness is servant to all. He is very dear to everyone. And because, that's another explanation, a begs explanation, that servant to all doesn't mean he does what anyone asks him to do. It's just like a parent is a servant of the child. The child may say, "Mommy, get me more sweets." So the parent may not do that. The parent does what's best. To be a real servant of someone means to do what's best for them, not necessarily what they ask for. So a person in Krishna consciousness is the real well-wisher, just like Prabhupada would sign his letters, "Your ever well-wisher," because Prabhupada knew what was best for each and every individual. Not that Prabhupada was their order supplier. So, because everyone is satisfied by his work, he is pure in consciousness. Because he is pure in consciousness, his mind is completely controlled. And because his mind is controlled, his senses are also controlled. Because his mind is always fixed on Krishna, there is no chance of his being deviated from Krishna, nor is there a chance that he will engage his senses in matters other than the service of the Lord. He does not like to hear anything except topics relating to Krishna. He does not like to eat anything which is not offered to Krishna. And he does not wish to go anywhere if Krishna is not involved. In other words, if there's no service of Krishna there. Therefore, his senses are controlled. A man of controlled senses cannot be offensive to anyone. So, in other words, when you have your senses controlled, when you're not envious, getting back to that verse about the Goswamis of Vrindavan, dhira, janapriyo, niramatsaro, pujito, and when you don't want attention, then you're actually worshipable. But anyway, so when you don't want attention, look at me, like that, then you can actually think of others' welfare, and you will not be offensive to anyone. One may ask, why then was Arjuna offensive in battle to others? Wasn't he in Krishna consciousness? So Arjuna was only superficially offensive because, as already been explained in the second chapter, all the assembled persons on the battlefield would continue to live individually as the soul cannot be slain. In other words, he was doing the best thing for them. So one may say, if the parent or the guru chastised the disciple or the son or daughter, then that person's offensive. Can you imagine some parent correcting the child, and the child said, you're committing a mad elephant offense against me. Or nowadays, if the parent, God forbid, should correct the child will dial 911. And I've seen children actually threaten their parents, saying, if you chastise me or try to correct me, I'm calling 911 and telling them you are abusing me. So that's not offensive for someone to correct out of love. So spiritually, no one was killed on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Only their dresses were changed by the order of Krishna, who was personally present. And also, anybody who died on the battle of Kurukshetra was liberated because Krishna was present there. Therefore, Arjuna, while fighting on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, was not really fighting at all. He was simply carrying out the orders of Krishna in full Krishna consciousness. Such a person is never entangled in the reactions of work because karma is Krishna's energy. Krishna is not under karma, and he doesn't subject anyone to karma who's following his instructions. One example that Prabhupada would give in this regard is that it is a crime to, let's say, burn down a house. It's arson. You go to jail. It's a very, very bad crime. It can hurt someone. So let's say someone is fighting a war and they have to just burn something down. Unfortunately, I'm not saying that we should do that. I'm not in favor of it. But let's say they do that. But they're following the direction of the president. If it is a dharmic war, not any war, we're not talking about, you know, the Germans of World War II who said, I was just following orders. That doesn't apply. But if it's something that's really to protect people, then the person is not held accountable for burning something or for hurting someone. But that has to be done under really strict guidelines. So here, Arjuna is wanting to be reassured that these are Krishna's very strict guidelines. He is showing his saintly qualities by not being willing to fight or to hurt people or to hurt their bodies, as the case may be, on his own case. He is wanting Krishna to reassure him. This is part of the Bhagavad Gita, the understanding of the Bhagavad Gita. He's wanting Krishna to reassure him. This is okay. Okay, next verse. Naiva kinchit karomi te yukto manyeta tatvavit pashan shrinvan spashan drigran ashnan gachan swapan shvashan palapan rishajan nam unmisham nimisham napi Indriyan Indriyarteshu Vartanta Aiti Daryan Na, never, eva, certainly, kinchit, anything, karomi, I do, iti, thus, yukta, engage in the divine consciousness. Manyeta, thinks, tatvavit, one who knows the truth, pashan, seeing, shrinvan, hearing, sprishan, touching, jigran, smelling, ashnan, eating, gachan, going, swa, pan, dreaming, shwasan, breathing, palapan, talking, vishyajan, giving up, on accepting, unmishan, opening, nimishan, closing, api, in spite of, indriyani, the senses, indriya, arteshu, in sense gratification, vartante, let them be so engaged, iti thus, dharyan, considering. A person, important person, a person in the divine consciousness, although engaged in seeing, hearing, touching, smelling, eating, moving about, sleeping, and breathing, always knows within himself that he actually does nothing at all. Because while speaking, evacuation, receiving, opening, closing his eyes, he always knows that only the material senses are engaged with their objects and that he is aloof from them. It's just like a man operating a machine. For example, here in Nugaloka now, we have a new tractor. And the new tractor has something called a front-end loader, and also it has a shovel in the back. So, therefore, when I use it, if I use it, or another devotee uses it, I understand, I am not, the shovel's of course called the backhoe, for those who are interested in technical words. So, I understand that when I am digging, or I am using it to dig, or I am using it to lift something, or to transport dirt. I'm not transporting dirt. The machine is. So this body is described as a machine. So one in transcendental or divine consciousness, as described here, sees that he's operating a machine. And the word in Sanskrit for machine is yantra. So he's operating this yantra to serve Krishna. And it's not, he's not doing it like I'm, you know, in one sense, I'm not holding my hands up. Sounds crazy. I'm not opening my eyes. I'm not speaking. I'm operating this machine, this body, which is a very complicated machine, obviously, just like any other machine or all machines, they're all designed. Because what is the quality, or what is it? What is the, let's say, common denominator of a machine, most machines, is that they have interacting parts. And you take one part away, and guess what? Machine doesn't work, like a car. Car has like pistons, it has a system for lubrication, it has a system for fuel, it has a system for ignition, you know, the spark plugs. It has wheels. So you take any part of that away, and it's quite an intricate machine if you've ever studied auto mechanics, then the thing doesn't work. Just take one wheel off. It's not going to work. You're driving around on three wheels, unless it's a three-wheel car. So that proves that the car is designed, because there's so many intricate parts, interacting parts, that if you take away one, it doesn't work. It would be impossible, I mean, for a car to be designed by throwing up a whole bunch of metal in the air, a whole bunch of rubber in the air, a whole bunch of whatever else, plastic in the air. So what to speak of this body is a machine, but far more intricate, far more complicated than any machine devised by any man. And so it must have been designed. Didn't come about by chance. That's impossible. And if anyone's interested in that subject matter, I've done courses on that before, showing, using the arguments of what we call intelligent design, showing mathematically it is impossible for one cell to come about by chance. Almost impossible. I mean, it's just, for all intents and purposes, it's impossible for one protein molecule to come about by chance. one protein molecule composed of amino acids. And even if one tries to do it in the laboratory, it is very hard to even make an amino acid, what to speak of a complicated protein that may have thousands of amino acids in the proper sequence. Okay, not a biology class. So that's a Krishna conscious person. A person in Krishna consciousness is pure in his existence and consequently has nothing to do with any work which depends upon the five immediate and remote causes, the doer, the work, the situation, the endeavor, and fortune. Fortune is sometimes mentioned as the super soul, Krishna. This is because he is engaged in a loving transcendental service of Krishna. Although he appears to be acting with his body and senses, he is always conscious of his actual position, which is spiritual engagement. In material consciousness, the senses are engaged in sense gratification. But in Krishna consciousness, the senses are engaged in the satisfaction of Krishna's senses. Krishna has spiritual senses. We have spiritual senses too, but they're covered right now. Therefore, the Krishna conscious person is always free, even though he appears to be engaged in affairs of the senses. Activities such as seeing and hearing are actions of the senses meant for receiving knowledge, whereas moving, speaking, evacuating, etc., are actions of the senses meant for work. We talked about this before in regard to Sankhya Yoga, which analyzes the active senses and the perceptive senses and also the eightfold material elements. And ultimately, the soul, the super soul. A Krishna conscious person is never affected by the actions of the senses. He cannot perform any act except in the service of the Lord because he knows that he's the eternal servitor of the Lord. I'll give you an example. Let's say, here's a good example. Just came to mind. So let's say one of my senses wants to drag me. Of course, wanting, that's a personification of the sense. But it somehow or other, it gives the urge. It gives the urge to drag me to see something. Okay. And I know that particular thing that I'm supposed to, the sense is dragging me to see, is not in Krishna's interest. All right, so then I say no to it, and I may struggle. Now, the metaphor I'm going to use is very interesting. Let's say you're driving a car, and somehow or other your wheels are out of alignment. That's like the conditioned soul. His senses are out of alignment. And the car tends to go to the right. But if you go to the right and you follow the cars, of course you could say the car wants to go to the right. You know, the car's not a person. But so if you follow the car's natural inclination to go to the right, you will crash. Especially if you're on the highway, motorway, or whatever you call it in your particular country, you will crash. So you hold the steering wheel, and I've had that happen when the car hasn't been properly aligned, and then you just like have to really apply some pressure to stay on the road. I mean, let's say if you went off the road and you crashed, and you gave the excuse to the police or insurance adjuster or something like that, you know, the car really had a tendency to go to the right, and I just decided to follow the car's tendencies, then that is not a good excuse. You'd get a really hefty ticket at that point. Or your insurance would go up, or you'd lose your insurance. Or you would get a DWI, because you were probably drunk if you said such a thing like that. DWI means driving under intoxication. So don't do your life under intoxication. Yes, your mind may have a tendency to do that. It may tell you, I gotta go here. I can't get out of, I can't stand it here anymore. Like, you know, right now. We're stuck in one place. This is the mercy of the coronavirus. Of course, we're traveling around through the internet. So the mind may say, I have to go, I have to go. And then we know, oh, well, not now, buddy. So even though there's the inclination, the pushings, or like sometimes people might think, oh, I have to go to India now on pilgrimage. Well, you may die. So if you're being pushed around by your mind, by tongue, by belly, by anger, vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, udarapashta vegam. So the Rupa Goswami talks about this. If you're pushed around by tongue, belly, genitals, mind, anger, and words, you're like a person who can't control your car. You shouldn't have a driver's license. You should just sit in the back seat and let someone else drive for you. You should be humble enough if you can't control your car. Sometimes if it's the wheels aren't aligned properly, the car's also shaking a lot. So I got a lot of people whose spiritual wheels are not aligned and they're shaking all the time. And we just have to hold them down so they don't shake too much. So, next verse. Sorry about that. So, Brahmanyadaya karmani sangam chatva karoti aha pyutena sapapena padma patram ivambasa. So, Brahmani, whoops, what's happening here? The computer is having a mind of its own. So, okay. Brahmani, under the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Adhaya, resigning, Karmani, all works, Sangam, attachment, Tyaktva, giving up, Karoti, performs, Yahu, Lipyate, is affected, Na, never, Sa, he, Papena, by sin, Padma, Patram, a lotus leaf, Iva, like, Umba, Tha, by the water. Translation, one who performs his duty without attachments and rendering the results unto the Supreme Lord is unaffected by sinful action, as a lotus leaf is untouched by water. So the reason that example is used about the lotus leaf has a waxy covering. And you know when you put water on something that has a waxy covering, it just beads up, doesn't get soaked in, doesn't soak in. So it's the same thing. And one who is actually aloof from this material world, just serving Krishna, whatever he or she does doesn't affect their consciousness because they know they're doing it for Krishna. They're in the transcendental mode of goodness. We talked about the three modes before, goodness, passion, ignorance. So in the mode of transcendental goodness, pure goodness, Vishuddha Self is a name for it, then you're really aloof, just aloof from everything except your concern for people. It's not that you're just so detached you don't give a damn about anything. But you're concerned to please Krishna, you're concerned to help other people, your whole life is dedicated to helping others in the right way, and you know how to help others. To really help others, you have to be trained up. Just like a doctor, to be able to help others, needs training. It's not that I can go in and operate on you, because I have no training. Even though I have all good intentions, I may hurt you. Anyway, so here, Brahmani means in Krishna consciousness. The material energy world is a sum total manifestation of the three modes of material nature, which actually I just talked about. Technically called the pradhana. The pradhana basically means when the material modes are in a unmanifest state. It's like clay before you take it out of the container and shape it into something. That's what pradhana technically means. The Vedic hymn Sarvam Yetai Brahma Mandukya Upanishad Tasmad Etad Brahma Nama Rupam Anamcha Jayate Mandaka Upanishad 1-2-10 and Bhagavad Gita in the 14th chapter, text 3. Mama Yoni or Mahad Brahma indicates that everything in the material world is a manifestation of Brahman. And though the effects are differently manifested, they are non-different from the cause. In other words, when you have a cause, everything that comes from the cause has to have some quality that was present in the cause. In other words, you can't have something in the manifestation that's not originally there in the cause. Makes sense. Just like if you have a powerhouse and you have 10 million volts and, you know, 1,000 amps or whatever it is, then in the individual houses, you will have, like, of course, overseas it's 230 volts, here it's 120 volts, 115 volts, but you have something less than is there in the origin or the powerhouse. Makes sense. In the Upanishad, it is said that everything is related to the Supreme Brahman or Krishna, and thus everything belongs to him. One who knows perfectly well that everything belongs to Krishna, that he is the proprietor of everything, and that therefore everything is engaged in the service of the Lord naturally, has nothing to do with the results of his activities, whether virtuous or sinful. Even one's material body, being a gift of the Lord for carrying out a particular type of action, can be engaged in Krishna consciousness. It is then beyond contamination by sinful reactions, exactly as the lotus leaf, though remaining in water, is not wet. The Lord also says in the Gita, Mayi sarvani karmani sanyasya, which means, give up all your works and do all your works for me. The conclusion, or Prabhupada translates it as, resign all works unto me, Krishna. The conclusion, because mayi means unto me, sarvani means all, karmani means activities, and sannyasya means renunciation. So in other words, just give up or give me all the results of your activities. That's what it means. The conclusion is that a person without Krishna consciousness acts according to the concept of the material body and senses, the urges. But a person in Krishna consciousness acts according to the knowledge that the body is the property of Krishna, and therefore should therefore be engaged in the service of Krishna. So what do you want to serve? The tongue, the belly, genitals, or do you want to serve Krishna? I mean, it's up to you. If you just want to worship your tongue, your belly, and all these other things, let's go ahead. You have my blessings. So text 11. Kayena manasa buddhya kevalar indriyar api yogina karma kurvanti sangam taktvatma shudaye. Kayena with the body, manasa with the mind, buddhya with the intelligence, kevalahai purified indriyai with the senses of even yoginaha, Krishna conscious persons, karma actions, kurvanti they perform, sangam attachment, taktva giving up, atma of the self, shudaye for the purpose of purification. The yogis, abandoning all attachment, act with body, mind, intelligence, and even with the senses, only for the purpose of purification. In other words, they have their goal. And as we heard earlier in the second chapter, those who are actually on the path of making quick, rapid advancement, I know quick and rapid is the same thing, they are one-pointed, focused. You don't win the race by looking everywhere else. Like if you ever run a race, whether it's a marathon race, a horse race, or whatever other type of race you're running, you just focus. Focus, focus, focus. And then you can win. So we're one-pointed. Yes, the purpose of my life, I'm servant of Krishna. Purpose of my life is to be Krishna conscious, and then whatever I do has to fit into that purpose. That's all. Just like someone who wants to make money. Purpose of my life is to make money. So whatever I do, whoever I talk to, wherever I go, that is part of fulfilling that particular purpose. So figure out what your purpose is. That's all. And if your purpose is not purification, the purpose is not transcendental knowledge, and if your purpose is not to escape the miseries of the material world, and your purpose is not to love Krishna, that's life. As they say in French, c'est la vie. That is life. So, but at least understand what your purpose is. Most people don't. That's ignorance. In ignorance, you don't have a purpose. In passion, you have a purpose. You know, whether it's acquiring money or prestige or position, that's passion. In goodness, you have a purpose to get liberated, and transcendental goodness, your purpose is to love Krishna and please Krishna. So, and to realize who you are spiritually, in the spiritual realm, and to connect with Krishna's pure devotees, the spiritual master. When one acts in Krishna consciousness for the satisfaction of the senses of Krishna, any action, whether the body, mind, intelligence, or even the senses, is purified of material contamination. There are no material reactions from the act, resulting from the activities of a Krishna conscious person. So this we've heard many times before. Therefore, purified activities, which are generally called sadachara, that means eternal behavior, like we said, achara means behavior, basically. Prachara means talking, achara means behavior, sat or sad means eternal, can be easily performed by acting in Krishna consciousness. Srila Rupa Goswami in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu means the ocean of the nectar of love of Krishna. It's a book called Nectar of Devotion that Srila Prabhupada has commented on the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and summarized it. In the first chapter, second part, text 187 describes this as follows. Iha yasya hare rashe karmana manasagina nikalashvap yavastasu jivan muktasu uchite. A person acting in Krishna consciousness, or in other words, in the service of Krishna with his body, mind, intelligence, and words, is a liberated person even within the material world, although he may be engaged in so many material activities. So the key words there, jivan mukta, means he's a liberated soul. And generally that refers to someone in the material world who is actually completely Krishna conscious. And we cannot really understand his motivations because it's so elevated, so transcendental, that better we don't try to guess, except he's trying to please Krishna. He has no false ego. What's a false ego? I and mine. So much is mine. I am me. Important. For he does not believe that he is the material body or that he possesses the body. Of course, we are important in Krishna's eyes. So therefore, we love ourselves as part and parcels of Krishna. We don't think less of ourselves. We just think of ourselves less. He knows that he is not this body, and this body does not belong to him. He himself belongs to Krishna. I belong to Krishna, and the body too belongs to Krishna, and the mind belongs to Krishna, and the home belongs to Krishna, and my computer belongs to me. No, oh, sorry. I did that deliberately, obviously. So my computer belongs to Krishna. Everything belongs to Krishna. I don't own anything, but I'm using it. Krishna has lent it to me, so I take care of it nicely. When he applies everything produced of the body, mind, intelligence, words, life, wealth, etc., whatever he may have within his possession to Krishna's service, he is at once dovetailed with Krishna. He is one with Krishna, one in purpose with Krishna, in touch with Krishna. He doesn't become Krishna. And he is devoid of the false ego that leads one to believe that he is the body, etc., because a lot of things that go along with being the body. Not only am I the body, that I am white or black or American. I mean, this is a lot of things connected. Member of a certain family. I speak with a certain accent, North Carolina. This is the perfect stage of Krishna consciousness. Wow. This is so purifying. So next verse. Yukta karma palam jatva shanti mapnoti naishtikayim ayukta karma karena. Yuktaha, one who is engaged in devotional service, karma, phalam, results of all activities, jaktva, giving up, shantim, perfect peace, apnoti, achieves, naishtikim, unflinching, ayukta, one who is not in Krishna consciousness, kamakarena, for enjoying the result of work, phalayin, the result, saktaha, attached, nibhajate, becomes entangled. The steadily devoted soul attains unadulterated peace, that means without stopping, not mixed, because he offers the result of all activities to me. Whereas the person who is not in union with the divine, who is greedy for the fruits of his labor, becomes entangled and connected with this verse. He's not peaceful. Someone who's greedy is definitely not peaceful. So he becomes entangled in the fruits of his work, which means the karma, and he also becomes entangled in a network of desires for different things, and he's unlimited desires. Unlimited desires. There's no limit. So, purport. The difference between a person in Krishna consciousness and a person in bodily consciousness is that the former is attached to Krishna, whereas the latter is attached to the results of his activities. The person who is attached to Krishna and works for him only is certainly a liberated person, and he has no anxiety over the results of his work. In the Bhagavatam, the cause of anxiety over the result of an activity is explained as being one's functioning in the concept of duality. That is, basically, there's Krishna and there's a material world. Krishna has no connection. That is, without knowledge of the absolute truth. Krishna is the supreme absolute truth, the personality of God. In Krishna consciousness, there's no duality. Krishna is everywhere. All that exists is a product of Krishna's energy. And Krishna is all good. In other words, there's nothing separate from Krishna. If you see anything separate from Krishna, according to the Bhagavatam, that's maya or illusion. Vatevatam napratyeta napratyeta chatmani tadvadya tatmano mayam yathavasha yathatamaha. Anything seen as disconnected or not connected to Krishna is Krishna's illusory energy, which is like a reflection or a shadow that appears in darkness, according to the Bhagavatam. Therefore, activities in Krishna consciousness are in the absolute plane. They are transcendental and have no material effect. One is therefore filled with peace in Krishna consciousness. Shanti. But one who is entangled in profit calculation for sense gratification cannot have any peace. There's so much anxiety. This is the secret of Krishna consciousness realization, where there is no existence besides Krishna, that there is no existence besides Krishna is the platform of peace and fearlessness. In other words, when you're carrying, not only are you peaceful because you know there's no reaction, you're doing it for Krishna, but you're fearless because you know Krishna is protecting you. Look what Prabhupada did. Coming to the Western world at 70 years of age with no money, basically, you know, less than $10 worth of rupees, which he didn't change, and not knowing if there's going to be any food there. So it was very appropriate that Prabhupada's name was Abhay Charan Day. So that means, Abhay means without fear. Charan means the feet. So that's Krishna Abhay. So Prabhupada's name is Abhay Charanavinda. That was the initiated name. One who has taken shelter in Krishna's lotus feet and therefore has no fear because Krishna is always protecting one and is always maintaining one. That's real fearlessness. So, sarva karmani manasa sanyasyaste sukham vasi vashi navadvai dvare pure dehi naiva kurvan nakaryam sarva all karmani activities manasa by the mind sanyasya giving up aste remain sukham and happiness, vashi, one who is controlled, navadware, in the place where there are nine gates, pure, in the city, dehi, the embodied soul, na, never. Eva, certainly, kurban, doing anything, not karyan, causing to be done. So here's a wonderful metaphor. The body is compared to a city of nine gates because you have all these apertures in your body. And you use these apertures to enjoy, you know, the two ears, the two nose, the mouth, the two eyes, our genitals and the rectum. So it's actually a very interesting metaphor. And in the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, this metaphor is dealt with much more deeply in the story of this person named Paranjana, who was always trying to enjoy his city of nine gates. Very nice metaphorical story. When the embodied living being controls his nature and mentally renounces all actions, he resides happily in the city of nine gates. That's the material body. That's where we are now. Neither working nor causing work to be done. In other words, not materially working nor causing material work to be done. The embodied soul lives in the city of nine gates. The activities of the body or the figurative city of the body are conducted automatically by its particular modes of nature. The soul, although subject to himself to the conditions of the body, can be beyond these conditions if he so desires. Owing only to forgetfulness of his superior nature, he identifies with the material body and therefore suffers. And that's stupid to identify with the material body. By Krishna consciousness, he can revive his real position and thus come out of his embodiment. Therefore, when one takes the Krishna consciousness, one at once becomes completely aloof from bodily activities. In such a controlled life in which his deliberations are changed, he lives happily within the city of nine gates. The nine gates are mentioned as follows. Navadware puredehi hamso leila yatevahi vashi saravashalokashastava rasha charashacha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is living within the body of a living entity, is the controller of all living entities all over the universe. The body consists of nine gates. We mentioned this before: two eyes, two nostrils, two ears, one mouth, the anus and genitals. The living entity is conditioned stage, identifies himself with the body. But when he identifies himself with the Lord within himself, he becomes just as free as the Lord, even while in the body. So in the metaphor I mentioned, the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it describes the living entity travels to these different gates to enjoy. I mean, it's really an amazing metaphor. You read the fourth canto. Therefore, a Krishna-conscious person is free from both the outer and inner activities of the material body. Jai, Haribo, liberation, ki jai. So, on that happy note, we can take some questions as soon as we liberate you from being mute. Like that. All right. You are now all officially liberated. So who has a question?
Hare Krishna Gurudev.
Okay, who's that?
It's Sumuk Das.
Oh, Sumuk.
Yes, Gurudev. From Fiji Islands.
Yes, I know.
Yeah.
I remember Fiji.
Yeah.
So what's up?
All good here. Just one small question, Gurudev. I was listening to your class, about the pure devotional service. And I'm trying my best to fix my mind in Krishna, controlling my senses by doing DTOship, chanting, listening to class, reading Bhagavatam, taking prasadam. But still, as soon as I finish doing the above services, the mind becomes entangled in my again. So what to do, Gurudev?
Good, very good question. What to do? One has to continually remind themselves of what their identity is, not just their activity. I mean, obviously, if we're absorbed in our activity, that activity is spiritual, and the mind becomes controlled while we're doing that activity. But when we're not doing that activity or similar activities, I don't want to shake my camera, when we're not doing that activity or similar activities, we should remind ourselves who we are. Who am I? What is my identity? And it said, Sarva Pati Vinir Muktam Tatpur Kraina Nirmalam Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhaktu Uchute. So we have all these designations, these temporary labels for ourselves. And we have to keep reminding ourselves. That's why we're hearing right now in the Bhagavad Gita class, or Bhagavad Gita study, who we are. Again and again, Prabhupada says we're servants of Krishna, we're servants of the servants of the servants of the Lord. So keep reminding yourself like that. And that's what I do. I keep reminding myself, I see a picture of Prabhupada, and I just think, well, that's my identity. I'm the servant of Prabhupada, and I become very happy. So it's a question of controlling the mind. And it's not the easiest thing in the world to do.
One more thing, Gurudev. Is it, yeah. When we take prasadam, it is that the mood also affects us, our mood as well?
Yes. Yes, the mood in which we take prasadam. We should, actually, Prabhupada would often say we honor prasadam. Because it's coming from Krishna. It's non-different from Krishna. It's spiritualized food. So we have this like reverential attitude towards prasadam, not just like Om Tat Sat and the offering to the deities is something like going past the checkout counter at the supermarket. You say, oh, it's prasadam, just got to dig in. No, we should be thinking like Lord Chaitanya said, this is the taste of Krishna. So while we're taking prasadam, while we're doing anything, then we have to remind ourselves, who we are and what we're doing. We often do things in religion or anything, any way in life, in a very ritual way. You know, after you do the same thing every day, you actually start to forget of why you're doing it. And you just do it. You put yourself on automatic. It's like automatic pilot. I've given that example before about pilots flying a plane on automatic pilot. They forget what they're doing. And some pilots, they get in trouble. They overshoot the airport. And I told a story about that a while ago. So we do that. So while you're taking prashanam, remember, I mean, I remember the first time I ate prashanam, or the first few weeks I ate prashanam, I was always thinking, this is Krishna, this is Krishna, this is Krishna. But now, after some time, you forget that and you just think, wow, quinoa, just what I want.
Sometimes, Gurudev, there are so many different varieties of devotees cooking for Krishna. And yeah. Some devotees cook and you feel very nice, and morning you wake up very nicely. But some devotees who cook at night, we feel, you know, mind taking into Maya. So what should we do in that case?
Don't blame the devotees. It's your fault. You're the one. You're the one. You should have such strong Krishna conscious digestion that you could eat an elephant and still be Krishna conscious.
It's so, our fault.
Yes. Don't. I mean, it's easy to find fault in others. You just say, oh, that cook must have been in Maya. That's why I'm in Maya, because the cook was in Maya. Well, not my fault, Prabhu. It's the cook's fault. And, you know, it's easy to blame others for our own lack of determination and Krishna consciousness. But we're responsible. I mean, you can basically decide to be Krishna conscious at any moment. You have the ability. You're empowered. Okay, let's give the opportunity to someone else who wants to ask a question. Who else has the question? Who else has a question? I do not see anyone else. Everyone else is so shy today. So shy.
No question.
Oh, Veda. Veda Priya. So, you have a question?
Yeah, so I've been wondering this for a while, because we've been talking about karma. When you say that someone is Krishna conscious, they don't experience karma anymore. Everything that happens to them is Krishna's doing.
Yeah.
What's the difference in that and just reaction?
Yeah, okay. So karma is basically a mechanistic thing. I mean, it's administered by Krishna's agents, but it's very mechanistic. Very mechanistic. You know, it's based upon, let's say if you break the law, I'll give you an example. If you break the law, then there's certain punishment that's mandated by, you know, legally the punishment for breaking the law. Just like if you get a speeding ticket over a certain amount, you're supposed to lose your license, or you're supposed to get a certain number of points. So that's really like a mechanistic thing. But let's say someone goes to jail because they've done something really bad, like we've seen a lot of politicians' friends go to jail because they've done something bad. And then I hate to use this example, I always get around using a political example, unfortunately. So let's say the president pardons you. Then you don't have to suffer anymore. So when you are connected to Krishna, as Krishna's devotee, then Krishna actually pardons you. You have no more karmic reaction. However, here's the big however. Krishna can give you a sample of your past karmic reaction just to remind you. That's called a token reaction. But the karma's gone. In other words, let's say in your last life you were Genghis Khan, I'm not sure you were, who did so many horrendous things, you know, some big criminal. Then just by your taking up Krishna consciousness, all that, whatever's there in the past record, is eradicated completely. And so then you're directly under Krishna's supervision. Of course, you're also responsible for your own actions. I mean, it's not let's say if you're free from karma and you jump off a building, you'll still get the physical result from jumping off of a building. So you're still controlling your own reactions to a certain extent, but it's no longer under the jurisdiction of karma. In other words, you don't have to worry about what you did in the past. Whatever you did, I mean, let's take a Bible, use a biblical example. Once upon a time, there was a lady who, I guess, she was doing things wrong in that time. You know, someone was not behaving themselves properly. They were stoned to death. So they were getting ready to kill this lady, throwing stones at her. And Jesus Christ interceded. And he said to the people, basically, he who is without sins, let him throw the first stone. And so no one was without sins. And so then he said to the lady, then sin no more. So the lady became a great devotee. In fact, one of his preachers, Krishna consciousness. So the point is, we have all these things we may have done in the past. I mean, I know in my own life, I was eating a regular sad diet. What does sad mean? Anyone know? Standard American diet. It's called a sad diet. Or in Australia, it's called a sad diet also. In New Zealand, it's called a SND, standard New Zealand diet. And in Fiji, it's called an SFD, standard Fiji diet. In Fiji, they like to eat pigs. Right? Isn't that right, Sumuk? Yeah, I know. They like to eat pigs. So, anyway, so let's say I was, I mean, I'm not just saying, it's a fact. I was doing these things before I joined the movement. I did eat meat. It's not that I was born to Krishna conscious parents and the parents just gave me my first bowl of prasadam when I was 6 months old in the grain ceremony. And I chose the Bhagavatams. You know, that's a ceremony too. You know, I probably chose a computer, because there weren't computers in those days. But so I did so many things that were reprehensible when I was young. It's not like Prabhupada. Like Prabhupada, he never did anything wrong his whole life. Even when his doctor tried to feed him chicken soup to cure him from the cholera one time, he spat out before the chicken soup got to his mouth. And when his uncle tried to feed him something with meat in it, he refused to eat it. So Prabhupada never did anything like that. But, you know, the rest of us, gangs, we've done things. Some, not everybody here. We have Ishwar Chaitanya, who's always been pure his whole life, grown up with devoted parents, and his sister Sundari. I can see them on there. And I'm sure there's some of you who've been, like, pure your whole lives. But, you know, I had a past, so that means every animal that I ate, I would have to take a birth, at least one birth, if not many. And so Krishna's just like taking all that karma away. Finished. I'm liberated. Just Krishna's taking all that karma away. So there's an example. Even sometimes you find the great acharyas like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they ate meat or fish in the past. And Krishna is showing that he eliminates all the bad karma, whatever karma. Of course, he had no good bad karma because it was a pastime. So Prabhupada said that he has created our good fortune, and Krishna has created our good fortune in this way. So that's how the karma gets eradicated. And that's a very important point. It's a good question. None of the reactions for anything I did in the past, I will have to suffer from. Thank God. Otherwise, you know, I'd be walking around as a chicken or something like that. Otherwise, I might be dead by now. I mean, who knows? So this is what it means to be free of karma. Is that okay?
Yeah, thank you, Gurudev.
All right, thank you, Radha Priya. All right, so I guess we're going to end now. it's time to go. Tomorrow morning we have Bhagavatam class, and tomorrow evening class too, so it's good to see everybody. We got that over 20 people, and then a lot more people on Facebook. In the next few days, we're going to be setting up to broadcast live our Mangalarti at 4:30. Of course, we're already broadcasting live a picture of the deities, but we're going to be setting up to broadcast live with the camera that zooms in and out of the deities, and with our Devadasi, or no, Devi Das, sorry. So our dancer for Mangalarti, we have our own dancer, it's pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. We have a professional dancer who dances for the pleasure of the deities, and it's not me. It's Champaka Lata. So, and she belongs to Krishna. That's the perfection of life, to belong to Krishna, isn't it? Krishna is hers, and she is Krishna's, and she is Krishna's, and Krishna belongs to her. Wow. I'm still trying to figure that one out. All right, so on that happy note, we'll see everyone for the next episode. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai, Gaur Premananda. Hariya.